Welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa Caprio. Do you believe in magic? What if you were told that all you had to do was get a little creative and work a magic spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Here on Postcards to the Universe, we will share manifesting, tips, postcards, creativity, abundance, and prosperity. Here is your host, Melissa Caprio.
Hello and welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. How is everyone doing? I hope you guys are doing well. Things are getting better around here, although as you know, you listen to me every week in Florida, it's super hot right now. So God, whoever's dealing with the heat right now, God bless us because it's really hot. I'm super excited about my show today. I have a great guest, iconic actress and now author of Wake Me When You Leave, Alisa Donovan, who I'm going to bring out in just a moment. Each week, if you guys listen to me on a regular basis, or if you're new to my show, I share an affirmation that I'm focusing on for the week. And I tap into the energy of that affirmation, and I keep repeating it to myself. It's power. I want it to become a new belief I incorporate into my life. So this week's affirmation is I call it a Magic Monday message. It's an image of a manifest postcard that I photograph with an affirmation that I'm focusing on. I post them on Mondays, and this week's is, I am the making of a star. Funny how I have an actress on my show this week, and I am 100% honest that I didn't plan it that way. When I select a manifesting postcard to photograph, I just go with the one that jumps out at me at the time. It isn't planned that I will share it on a particular week. Like I won't pick a postcard to coincide with that coming week. And it just, so it happens over and over again that the affirmation and the postcard I focus on for the week somehow do coincide with each other. And it's not a coincidence. So I love when that happens. Okay. What does I am the making of a star mean? You could take it literal and become a television or movie star like Alisa, my guest today. And this is how I do it, I am the making of a star in my life. What do stars do? They shine. You can navigate your location by looking up and following the North Star. So taking that metaphor in your life, how are you navigating? Are you flailing around in your life, or are you seeing the unique person you are and shining your light on something that only you have to offer? Are you shining in your own life? Actually, a lot of the time we are not, and we wonder why we are so messed up or unhappy. We look for ways to mask that unhappiness, and usually it's very unhealthy, the things we do to numb ourselves out, not to feel. So I ask you to think about your life and ask yourself, am I making myself the star of my life? And if the answer is yes, fantastic. Keep it up. See all the wonderful things you will manifest and the abundance that will be drawn to you. And if the answer is no, why not? If it's as an artist, are you creating? If it's as a parent, are you present with your children? If it's as a doctor, are you compassionate with your patients? If it's as a teacher, are you excited with your students about learning? The list is endless. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You can always be the star in your own life, because truthfully, you and you alone are the protagonist in your own story. So if you play out your role this lifetime, you might as well make it as wonderful as possible. And that starts with how you treat yourself. Make yourself a big, bright, shining star in your life and see how magnetic you become and how abundant your life can be. If you want to see these Magic Monday message postcards with their affirmations, you can go to my website, Postcards to the Universe. I share them each week on all my social media platforms. And if you're interested in doing inner work exercises and reading people's incredible journeys of transformation, inspiration, and manifesting, please check out my book, Postcards to the Universe, Harness the Universe's Power and Manifest Your Dreams, which you can find at your favorite online bookstore. Or in a bookstore, actually. And you can find me across all the social media platforms, including YouTube. And make a manifesting postcard and send it to me. When your manifestation becomes your reality, we can have you share your story with us if you want. Email me if you have any questions, and I will help you create a wonderful, powerful manifesting postcard. Okay, next week I have Reverend Maggie Oman Shannon, an ordained interfaith and unity minister, spiritual director, workshop and retreat facilitator, artist, and she's the author of 9 books, including Having Hope, 365 encouraging poems, prayers, and meditations for daily inspiration. And we're going to share her work on cultivating hope in our lives. So please join me next week. All right, to get to my fabulous guest today. Alisa Donovan is part of iconic pulp culture. She began her film career originating the role of Amber in the iconic Paramount Pictures comedy Clueless. She followed that up with television series Beverly Hills 90210. She then went on to reprise her role on the TV series of Clueless, during which time she shot the Paramount and SNL Films comedy A Night at the Roxbury. Alisa has had reoccurring roles on multiple other TV series and has starred in numerous telefilms. Alisa's first book, Wake Me When You Leave, Love and Encouragement via Dreams from the Other Side, was released this past summer on June 8th, 2021. The book is her very personal memoir about losing her job, her relationship, and her father to cancer all over a very short period. Through her grief, she began to connect to her father to a series of visitations and dreams, helping her to heal and remedy her life. The film version of Wake Me When You Leave is currently in development. The film will mark Alisa's screenwriting and directorial debuts. You can find Alisa's new book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and local bookstores, and follow her on her social media accounts to see what she's doing. Welcome, Alisa. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, me too. Okay. So I know who you are, and it's so funny because I just happened to, you know, I've been home a lot more since this pandemic, right? So yeah. Watched more TV this past year and a half than I think I ever have in my life. So Clueless was just on, and I knew you were already coming now. I'd known you were coming on the show. And so it was so fun to watch it, like, from a totally different perspective. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. She's going to be on my show next week.
Right.
Just on. I miss the 80s and the 90s, I have to say.
It was great. Well, I was just in New York, actually. Yesterday I did a book signing there yesterday, but on Monday night, the Bryant Park summer film series came back after an absence because of COVID, and mm-hmm. they started the festival. They opened it with Clueless. So they had mm-hmm. me come as a surprise guest to introduce the film. And it's so crazy to think that is, you know, that it has just reached so many people and brought so many people so much joy for so many years. It's really special. You know, it's a really nice thing to be a part of.
It is. It is. And you can, it's one of those movies that you can watch over and over again because it's so funny. You know, it's like so cute and so funny. And yeah, it's just feel good when you watch it. But
right.
I know who you are. Many people who are listening to my show definitely know who you are. But just share a little bit about your background for those who are hearing you from the first time.
So I have been a television and film actress for over 25 years. And I grew up in New York. Went to college in New York City for acting and writing. And Clueless was really the first big project. Not really, it was the first major film that I had ever done. And then, as you mentioned, I continued to do television and more film. And then I did the show Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, for several years. And all along, I've always been a writer as well. And then all of these seemingly negative things happened at the same time, and that compelled me to write this book.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really enjoyed the book. And I was telling Lisa before we came out, the way I have so many authors on my show that I really like to try to, I start the book the week of the show. I'm a fast reader too, and I'm a major reader. Like, I love to read. So I usually like to start on Mondays, so that way by the time Wednesday comes around and we're live, I have the book fresh in my mind. And one of the questions I was going to ask you is, were you always writing? Was that something that you always did?
Yes. So I started writing when I was a child. I remember writing stories in first grade. And I remember I always had one of those, the black and white marble notebooks. Do you remember mm-hmm. those? I don't know if they still have those. I wanted school supplies before I went to school. You know, my older brother and sister were always, you know, not wanting to go to school. And I was always in the first day of school photos before I even was in kindergarten.
Right.
So
right.
I remember I would take notes, like write stories when we would be on, you know, family vacations, or we had a pool growing up in our backyard. And one of the chores and family tasks that we had to complete every spring was to take the cover off of the pool. I know now I think they have automatic things that might do that.
Yeah.
They didn't have that in the 80s.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, because I was born in New Jersey, so I know that. Yes. Yeah.
And okay. So we would, like, there were the big bags of filled with water, you know, like rubber bags filled with water that held the cover on the cement on the sides of the pool. So at any rate, it was this thing that we just dreaded, but my father made us do it. And I remember in particular, just writing notes, telling a story while this was happening and turning it into this, like, you know, a creative story. And my dad is so furious with me, like, put the pencil down and just help us do what we're supposed to do here. And I think that is very much kind of what I grew up doing. And there was a time when I thought, I always knew I wanted to be an actress from a very young age, but I also thought I might want to just go in the direction of writing. And so it was always kind of a tandem thing for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so your book came out. So let's get into this book, which is, like I said, it's really good. So your dad passes away in 2003, and the book just came out in 2021. So share a little bit about, you know, your experience of, like, well, first let's talk about you wanting to tell the story and you know, why did you start writing it right away? Or did you decide many years later, like, I need to write this story?
Right. So what happened, essentially over the course of a very short period of time, I was doing the television show Sabrina, and it was canceled, and I did not get another job. The relationship I was in with the person I thought I was going to marry ended, and my dad died of cancer. He was diagnosed and was very ill for 4 months and then passed away. So I was basically went from having a life where I understood all of it, where I was going, who I was. I had a successful personal life and professional life and healthy family, to having none of those things. And I really was just, I mean, it sounds strange to say it now, but I really was so thrown by how thrown I was. I kind of couldn't understand why I was so devastated. And, you know, I started to write pretty early on, but in the beginning, I just couldn't write anything because I felt so just lost and devastated, you know? So initially when I would start to write, I actually kept thinking about my mom first, because I thought they had been married for nearly 50 years. You know, she didn't know any other life except living with her parents and then living with my father. And they had a very conventional, traditional marriage where she was a stay-at-home mom. And I just thought, if I'm having such a hard time, how is she even functioning through all of this? And so I kind of first started to write through her eyes. And then it started to flow more into my own feelings and experiences that were just kind of these snippets. It certainly didn't start as a book. It just started as me needing to get through the muck of how I was feeling and just try to process it all.
Yeah. Well, when I was reading it, that it sounds like your security was sort of, the rug was ripped out from under you all at the same time. So, you know, the security of a job, which is your financial means, the security of a relationship is gone. And then your father, which represents security from your childhood all at once. And when you get hit like
that,
when you get hit like that, it really kind of throws you for a loop. I went through, you know, a threefer also. I left a job I loved, a house I loved, and a relationship all within 30 days. So it's like a sucker punch.
Oh, wow.
It hurts.
Yes.
And you're grieving, and you said in the book, and I thought this was really, you described it really well. You went through a period where you sort of just kind of got quiet and you would stare at things for a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, I remember being in that space myself. Like I wouldn't be doing anything and time was weird and I would just go within and stare. And you really did describe that very well. Like I wouldn't know how to describe what that was, but I totally got it when I read it in your book.
Oh, I'm so glad, because that was one of those things that, you know, and those periods can go on for such a long time, and you really lose sense, you lose time, so to speak. And it certainly, I think, is a sign of a part of depression, also of just real loneliness and having to, it's a part of the grief process, you know, it's almost a disassociative period too, but it also is really going deeper, as you say, and that is, I think, where real transformation and the beginning of healing begins, is actually allowing oneself to get to that place instead of trying to skirt around it, you know, which I think we spend a lot of time trying to avoid discomfort and avoid bad feelings and sadness and all those things. And you know, anyone that's come through something, I think, would agree that there's no way around it. You have to go through it. And, you know, that's a big part of the healing.
For sure. Okay, I want to delve into the book about the visitations, but we're up at our first break. So let's take our break here. And then when we come back in 2 minutes, we're going to talk about your dad's visitations to you. So cool. Love it.
Great.
Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Melissa Caprio from Postcards to the Universe, creating the life you crave. Do you believe in magic? What if I told you all you had to do was get a little creative and work a dream spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Well, guess what? I've got the spell for you. Postcards to the Universe, a global movement for manifestation, is a casting magical tool for you to use whenever you want. How does living in passion sound to you? Join me in my movement where you get to create in the magical playground. Let's think outside the box and do some playful conjuring. By casting out our desires with a manifesting postcard, we explore our hearts and allow the alchemy of our dreams to appear. And don't forget to tune in each week here on Om Times Radio with my show, Postcards to the Universe, Creating the Life You Crave at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. I share tips on creativity, abundance, and prosperity, and you will be introduced to the coolest guests, trailblazers, mystics, and creatives who enrich our lives. Welcome back. So if you're just joining me today, I have iconic actress and now author of Wake Me When You Leave, Elisa Donovan, on. And Elisa, talking about your book, Wake Me When You Leave, when did you really sit down and decided, after your experiences, because you talk in depth about your experiences and your dreams and the visitations and the signs from your dad and everything, which I love. But when did you sit down and say, you know what, I really need to make this a book?
So initially, I started to write it as I wanted it to be a book very early on. And I would say in about 2006 or 7, maybe? And I just had this intuition and this very strong feeling that I'm going to write a book. This needs to be a book. Now, that was not met with a lot of joy and acceptance from the people around me, because I was an actress and, you know, I didn't have a literary agent. I didn't. And so, but I just said, this is what I want it to be. And people suggested that I write it as a performance, as a play, as a movie. And so I didn't want to do that. And then I thought, well, I can write it as a book and I can do it as a one woman show and just read it. So I started to develop it as a one person show. And through that writing process, you know, writing for stage is very different than writing a book and writing a narrative. And so there was a whole shift in the writing that I had to do for that. And I did it at the Geffen Theater in LA as a benefit for the Big Brothers Big Sisters Foundation, which is an organization that I was on the associate board of at the time. So I did this play, and it was a version of the book, you know, much shorter, and only had a couple of dreams in it, and really was more just the story of my dad's passing and what happened right after. And people's responses were so just overwhelmingly positive, and they were so moved, and they felt like they just, that it was so raw, but they wanted to talk about it, and it was funny. And I thought, this is how I want the rest of my creative life to be. I want to connect with people in this way. You know, I want the work to be this authentic. I want it to have meaning. And in that, at that time, that really shifted how I went about everything. And it still took many years to actually make it a book. At one point I had, you know, officially written a proposal and had maybe four or five chapters and had a book agent, and we got close to getting a deal, but it never happened. And then I just put it aside and I started to write it as a movie. And then the book came back around. So it's this long, labyrinthine kind of process. Yeah. That, so the positive part of that is that, one, I was revising the whole all along the way. So when we actually submitted the proposal to publishers, it felt very complete to them. Now, it wasn't complete in that it didn't need editing, and I needed to add quite a bit. But it felt like, oh, they could tell this person knows how to write. She knows the story she's telling. And, you know, we sometimes need distance from the experience in order to be able to communicate it in a way that's, you know, that touches people. So I think that it really benefited from that time.
Yeah. Book proposals are fun, aren't they?
You think, wait, I did all this work. Shouldn't I just get paid for that?
I know.
Didn't I do it already? Isn't it done? Where's my big fat check?
Because I know. I know. I'm working on my second as we speak. I'm like, oh my God, this is harder than the book. This is harder than the book. Yeah.
I know it.
But I agree with you. Sometimes we do need some distance from it so we can put it in perspective. So let's talk about what the book's about. So you're very open and honest about your thoughts, which were funny, you know, of how you think of your family, which was making me laugh. I'm really close family too, and the way we are with each other, you know, so it really resonated with me. And how were that time your dad passes away, you guys are all devastated, you're grieving, you have, you know, amazing parents, very, you know, you talk about your family, amazing family growing up. How was it when your dad first visited you? Like, share a little bit about what that was like.
Well, it was very powerful and very overwhelming. And
sure.
I was, you know, in a moment of really being grief stricken to the point where I wasn't sleeping at all. And it was, you know, many consecutive days of not sleeping, which really just has such a detrimental effect on your nervous system and on everything. And I just was so in such a dark place. And I fell to my knees one night in the middle of the night and just said, I need to sleep. Please help me. And I asked my dad to help me. I just said, please, I need sleep. And something happened in that moment where I just felt this presence tell me to just go to bed. Just go to bed. And I got up from the living room and I lay down in my bed and I felt a physical presence, like a physical hand on me, laying me down to sleep and saying, just go to sleep. And the next thing that I remember, I was asleep and I woke up in this place that was, I call it like a, you know, it's like a visiting hours in the afterlife is what it felt like. Like I was floating in this boat and I look and my dad is with me and it's very peaceful and very quiet. And I describe it a lot in the book, but briefly I would say it's the sensation of feeling very, very pure in every sense of the word and in every single way. So any of my thoughts were directly transmitted to my dad and vice versa. And I could hear these thoughts and his, but our mouths weren't moving. And I just asked him again. I just told him that I felt very lost and I didn't know how to function. I didn't know if I could continue. And then I realized that he was trying to reach out to me also, that he felt as though he was in this half place and wasn't ready. You know, and when he was sick, he was not ready to go. He was not willing. He was in denial about it. He was very angry. It was really a terrible, terrible period of time and really particularly difficult for my mom and my brother who were there for more of it. So it made sense to me, but the feeling was so overwhelming and it was this, there was no sense of time. I didn't feel like it's so difficult to explain. And then as soon as he tried to reach out to physically touch me, he couldn't. And then I tried and then I woke up abruptly and I was in my bed and I was sweating and I screamed and I just felt, and it wasn't a scream of fear. It was just all of this emotion that came out. And then I fell back into this heavy, heavy sleep. And so that was the first time that I really felt him trying to reach out to me. And it kind of, you know, it at once overwhelmed me. But then I also felt like, oh gosh, I just want to go back to that place. I just want to be there with him. And then, you know, the following period was, I started to wake up a bit. It was a very long process and, you know, slowly things started I started to be able to function a little more, but that was really when I feel like I opened this portal that allowed me to be more in touch with everything and everyone. Yeah. So even in my waking life, my life changed dramatically in terms of how I felt and how I looked at things and how I connected to people and to what was happening around me.
I think, I mean, and I had a similar, my grandmother visited me after she passed away. We were very close. And I was 16 at the time and she used to stay and when she would come to Florida from New Jersey and she'd sleep in the bed with me and she would scratch my hair. She always had these long nails and she scratched my hair and she would hide smoking from my mom in the bathroom. And she was always knocking stuff over and I heard her slippers and I heard her in the bathroom and I felt her scratch my head. And this was about 6 months after she passed away. Yeah, I know, it was incredible. And I remember it so vividly. And so when you were describing that place, you know it's a visitation and it's not just a dream. Because I do think there's a difference. I think sometimes we dream about people that pass on and that's coming from our subconscious, but you know when you've been visited. And it is a completely
different feeling. It's like you're more lucid than when you're awake. It's so much, it's like crisp, but very soft. It's like it has like all of these opposites in one, it feels, and this very like pure, deep experience that the first time was very overwhelming, like I said. And then when the other subsequently, I felt more and more open to it or at peace with it. Because I think initially I realized I was scared. And I looked at that and I went, oh, I think I'm scared also because if I really admit that this is happening. If I mm-hmm. let it in, then I really have to accept that he is gone from this right. life, that he has passed. And I didn't, once I realized that, I really just kind of, I mean, it was very emotional, but I also realized that I had been kind of putting up a little bit of a barrier because I had been sort of trying to pretend like I wasn't feeling these sorts of things. And, you know, as you know, the feeling, I talk about this in the book too. There was a time I was driving in my car.
Yeah.
And I was really having a tough time. And it was, I promise you, I thought I was going to look to my right and he was going to be sitting there. I felt him so clearly and so without doubt. And, you know, these kinds of messages are really, they're so hopeful and optimistic because I think that we have this feeling of death as being so final because the absence of someone we love can feel so, so vast and just so insurmountable. And in kind of understanding and that they don't ever leave us. They may leave in the physical form here, mm-hmm. which has its own, you know, set of difficulties and challenges and, you know, things to grieve. They do go on in another form and they are still with us.
Yeah. Did you always believe in signs and visitations? I mean, did you like go to psychics growing up? Because I've always kind of believed that stuff. When I was a teenager, I used to go to psychics, get my
cards
read.
Even when you were a teenager?
Yeah,
Were your parents into it or no?
Well,
did you discover that?
My parents weren't into it. No, just friends. Like we would go to those mystical bookshops. Mm-hmm. Like I've always been drawn to that. I'm Catholic. Well, not my parents are Catholic. We're Italian, but we never were practicing. So it was sort of like my parents are really open about me and my sister discovering what works for us. Like, you know, they're just, they're fine with it. So I was just always attracted to it. So I always loved it. Did you?
Yes. So I did. Mm-hmm. My grandmother, who I was born on her birthday, mm-hmm. and I share, her name was Adeline, and that's my middle name. I was named after her. But I don't think that I knew that. I guess I did know this probably as a child. She would go to see psychics all the time. Mm-hmm. And she would tell my mom about it. But my mom never engaged in any of that. And so I remember she had tarot cards that when she passed away, when I was maybe 11 or 12, those are the things I wanted. I wanted her tarot cards, you know, yeah. on jewelry or anything. Right. I wanted her tarot cards.
I understand that.
I really started seeing psychics and things, or becoming really actively curious about it, probably in high school, I would say. And then I definitely am a person who has seen psychics for years. And, you know, there are a couple in particular, one in particular that I speak with a couple times a year. And I talk about her in the book, too. And, you know, it's really a gift mm-hmm. when you see that these people who have that kind of ability, it's really a gift. Certainly see it that way.
It definitely is. And I have a very good friend who in the last 5 years has opened herself up to all of this. And she is like amazing. When she said yes, like now, like, you know, she's so psychically connected and all now she channels and it's like, it's crazy. And spirits come to her. Yeah. It's just amazing. So I've always been attracted to that. And I think, like you said in the book, you said, the line, the film is really thin between, you know, the living and the, you know, the physical and the non-physical world, let's say, physical and non-physical.
Yes.
And I do think that more and more people are waking up. I do see
it. I do
it.
Too.
I mean, I here we too. Are talking openly about it. And
exactly.
right? On the radio, which is going to go across social media. People can listen all over the world. You know, like nobody would do that 25 years ago. It would be like hush, you know?
Even unless, you know, when I think about when I was first trying to get this book published, I didn't at that time, I did not make the dreams a big part of the book because I felt as though people were not ready for that, which they were.
I was going to ask you about that. So before, let's dive into that a little bit. But right now we're at the next break time. So let's take our break right here and then we'll come back and talk more about that.
Okay.
Interesting. Welcome back. I'm here with actress and author Elisa Donovan. So we were talking before the break about how the world is shifting and people are so much more open to, you know, somebody like you as an actress who's writing a book, not about growing up as an actress, but talking about her father who's dead visiting her, right?
Yeah.
You know? So how, I know it's crazy. How was the publishing world open to a book like this coming from you as an actress?
Well, initially, when we first pitched and I had a different book agent altogether, and this is going back years now, I want to say 2010, maybe.
Okay.
The feeling was, first of all, no one understood what kind of book I was writing. So at first they thought, well, what? She's writing a book about being in Clueless and on Sabrina, the Teenage Witch. And I said, no, I don't want to read that book. Like, who wants to read that book? You know, somebody way more famous than me is going to write that book. And I said, no, we had to keep reiterating that, no, she doesn't have a ghostwriter. She's written this herself. This is not a vanity book. And they just couldn't wrap their heads around it. And, you know, the ones that did read it, which we got close to getting a deal, they felt like they had one other book that was similar, so they couldn't have another. And I didn't put a lot of the dreams in it because they weren't, it wasn't what people really wanted to hear. And so I kept saying, but it's also a funny book and a spiritual book. And the word spirituality at that time was not as in the, you know, collective unconscious as it is now. And it just didn't work. And this time around, you know, it was not only was it met with more open arms, my editor said to one of the first things she said to me before we even, you know, signed the deal was that she said, these are the things that we want to hear more about. That is what, like, I actually want you to go deeper into these things and put in more dreams that you are having. And I went, it was like someone telling me I won the lottery. I felt like, oh, I can write more about that stuff.
Right.
Just wait, you know, I'm like, I could fill volumes with that.
Yeah.
So I think we are shifting, you know, it's a slow shift, but I feel it.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. And your mom is a trip, man. She, I love your mom the way you write your mom, man. She really is cool. Like, she reminds me a little of, she reminds me of my mom a little bit. My mom has that similar energy. And I just, it was so cool how your mom would call you and get so excited because your dad was leaving her. Because does your mom lose a lot of stuff or something because your dad was bringing back her jewelry?
Yes. And so she, prior to all of this, she was not really, I mean, I think she was, she'd listen if I would tell her something about a psychic or something otherworldly that could happen, but she was not really on board.
Right.
So the fact that this became, you know, she just jumped on this train and was ecstatic about it. And, you know, it was really, she also, I didn't put this in the book, but there was a one time when I went home to visit her and she said she had this a wire coat hanger. And she said, someone told us that if you hold, you hold the, have you heard of this? A wire hanger in your hand and it moves towards where the spirits
dowsing.
Are in the house.
She was dowsing for spirits.
Maybe. Is that what it is? And I just
well, they do dowsing with water and like certain things. So it sounds like your mom was dowsing for your dad.
Yes, I think she was. So then, and another, you know, throughout this period,
My mom doesn't no longer lives in that on the farm that we mm-hmm. that I write about in the book where she was living. But at the time when she was still living there, my other grandmother on my father's side, when she would come mm-hmm. to visit, she passed away after my dad. But when she used to come to visit that house, she would always sleep in the office area, which was off of the living room. That was her, it was mm-hmm. the warmest room. So she would rather like sleep on the pullout couch in there than sleep in a bedroom because it was really warm in there. Mm-hmm. So I came to visit and I opened my, I opened the front door, like they picked me up at the airport, and I was going in the front door and I saw someone walk from the living room into the office. And I just thought it was my brother. Like I was carrying a suitcase right. and I just looked quickly and I thought, oh, it's my brother. How do you get back there so quick? You know, and I said, oh, I'm not staying in there. I'm going to stay in the guest room. And I turned around and my brother was outside, you know, and I mm-hmm. said, oh my God, that was my yeah. grandmother. And then I realized, yeah, I saw this woman in her robe, in this blue robe that she would always wear. It's like a almost a peacock colored robe. And you know, that very yeah. slow movement, like super mm-hmm. steady and slow. It's almost, you know, it's sometimes humorous because you think, oh, this is why they make it look like this in movies. Because that's what it looks like. Yes.
Yeah. And yeah. I think it's cool that you're open. Your family's so open to it all. So I do think that when you are more open, you get more of that. Because my whole family is like that. Yeah. My mom is like that. My mom saw her grandmother when I was a baby leaning over my crib. My grandmother knew her favorite cousin passed away after she got out of surgery. He visited her, you know. So there's like these things that yeah. happen. And when you're open, you're an open channel to it. It's really mm-hmm. cool. And you shared your last, if you want to just touch on it, the last visitation, or is this the last visitation? In the book, you say it's the last visitation with your dad.
I haven't had any other visitation. Mm-hmm. I think that was the last visitation dream okay. with him, mm-hmm. but I have had him visit
Give
me in
signs.
Life, in
yeah.
my waking
yeah.
life. Oh, yes.
Yeah, you get signs all the time. Yeah, that's cool.
All the time, especially in doing the press for this book, you know, doing it in the pandemic,
sure.
so much of it has been from home. Mm-hmm. And we had recently moved. We moved in May, and I really started to do the bulk of the press in mm-hmm. middle, end of May and June. And I set up my desk in one part of that house, and right outside the window is this big, beautiful tree. Mm-hmm. And the second that I sat down to do the first interview, I always think of a hummingbird as mm-hmm. my dad. Like that's kind of who comes mm-hmm. to visit me. And I sit down, I turn on my lights, and I look over. Oops, there's a hummingbird out of right. nowhere. And right. every time I do interviews, the hummingbird is there. And then once I mentioned in an interview how, oh, you know, mm-hmm. my dad always comes to me and I'm like, I'm sure he's going to be right there. And of course, the one time I mentioned it, no, he wasn't there, you know? And I said, oh, he'll be around in a second. And I just pictured him like laughing, you know,
right,
going like, you don't take me for granted. I'm not going to die, you know?
So that's one of your signs. So hummingbirds are your dad. Okay.
Yeah. And music, you know, I get a lot of things with music that he loved classical music and also a lot of jazz. And so like Louis Armstrong and Ray Charles and, you know, those kinds of songs will come on in very unusual environments. You know, I'll be in like a super cool hip, you know, Hollywood place. And this has happened to me and I had a meeting and I was suddenly very nervous about meeting this actor to be in the film. And I started to feel nervous and insecure and like, what am I like, he's not gonna, why will this very well-known person want to be in my little movie? Right. And it went from like Lady Gaga to Ray Charles just out of nowhere. And
so
I was like, okay,
like, I'm here.
All right.
Yeah.
And I just think, okay, I'm all right.
Love that.
I'm all right.
I love that. I get that too. The song Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say I Love You. That's Grant. That's my mom. We call her mom. That's my mom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, she loved the song. She loved the song. And anytime, like if there's always, it always comes at a time that's a time that you wouldn't normally hear the song, you know? So that's how I always know it's like a validation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I loved when you described, which I thought, what an experience that you, your dad, when he came to you in this last visitation dream, he still really showed, he still looked sick and he showed you his last days on earth.
Yep.
That gives me goosebumps. Because I just got goosebumps again when I say it to you.
This is how powerful that was and how much I knew that this is, again, not a typical unconscious sleeping dream.
Right.
Because as I had mentioned before, that the last week really of his life was quite brutal for everyone. And it was just bad. And so he didn't want to go and it was just awful. And so in this final dream, he really transformed from, it looked like him, and then he turned into his ill facade, like what he looked like when he was really, really at the end of his life. And everything flashed before me from my whole childhood. And then like all of the moments in this quick flashes. And then I saw his last days and how mean he was and how and what in pain, how much pain he was in, and how sad we were. And it's like he was showing me that he knows that he did that and that now he's accepting that he's moved on. And it was like this, and then he looked back at me, and all I can say is that it was this understanding and this knowingness between the two of us, where he was saying, I see you. I see everything that you are. I see who you are and what you are, and I love you, and everything is okay. And I knew that he was saying his goodbye in that phase of his crossing over, or that place he was in, he was truly saying goodbye. And it was incredibly powerful and very different from the very first dream like that I had with him. It was incredibly peaceful.
What a gift. Oh,
and when I woke up, I was literally smiling, and I woke up in this peaceful state right from that dream. And I was very emotional, but I felt it was beautiful. I felt so much peace. And it was really something.
It sounds like it. So I saw in your bio that it's going to be made into a movie for sure.
Yes.
Like it's going to happen. Congratulations.
Thank you. Okay. Well, it's in development right now, and we have some great producers and a great couple of actors attached. And we are trying to secure the financing with a small movie. It's a labor of love, and those things take time. But I think that, you know, everyone who has jumped on board thus far has done so because they love the material so much. And, you know, that also shows me how people do want to tell meaningful stories and things that resonate and that are hopeful, you know.
We need more movies like that. There's only so many superhero movies they can make over and over again, for real.
Thank you. It's so true, you know. And there's, you know, I think that it is possible. Life is full of all of these shades and colors and feelings. There is sadness, there is great joy, there is pain, there is pleasure, you know. And trying to avoid any of those pieces is really doing yourself a disservice, because it's all a part of the human experience. And, you know, all that I went through in that time period was so challenging, and yet it has enhanced my life to a degree that I can't even articulate how much fuller my life is today. And I truly think it is because of walking through all that I did. That's the message that I really want to share to people, that, you know, we can come through these things to the other side and have a full and happy life.
Are you writing the screenplay also?
Yes, I did. I wrote the screenplay.
Good for you, girl. Love it. I love it. So we only have like a minute left. So do you have any book signings coming up in person anywhere? If anybody's listening where you're doing a book signing?
Yes, I'm doing one in Los Angeles. I'm in LA right now to do one tomorrow night. That is the 26th at 7 p.m. at the Barnes & Noble at the Grove in LA. And if you social media, you will, my social media, it'll be up there. And I'm hopeful that we can, I did a kind of surprise pop-up one in New York yesterday. But we're hoping to do more in-person things to schedule them. It's been a little tricky with COVID, but I think in the fall there will hopefully be, you know, some more on the East Coast that we'll do and more in other parts of California and Seattle and, you know, anywhere that we can schedule them, but it's we have to kind of see what happens with COVID.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Alisa. It's been such a pleasure having you, and I love your story, and I'm glad you wrote it. It's just like so my kind of book. And for my peeps who are in the LA area who listen, if you want to go to a book signing, it's tomorrow at 7 p.m. Pacific, correct? Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, Barnes & Noble at the Grove in LA. Awesome. Yes. Awesome.
And the audiobook comes out September 7th.
Oh, perfect. I love audios. So guys, please check out Alisa Donovan's new book, Wake Me When You Leave. And it's such a pleasure having you, Alisa. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. And I'm wishing everyone a wonderful week filled with joy, abundance, and love. Peace.